Welcome back to the program. It used to be that the military style of leadership, top-down, command and control, was how the world operated. Today in the military, as well as in business and life, leadership is now about how we connect with each other, how we inspire others, how we collaborate effectively, how we incorporate the new values of our time into entrepreneurship, leadership, family, and ultimately success. Few understand these principles better than our guest today, Betsy Myers. She served as chief operating officer and a senior advisor to Barack Obama's 2007-2008 presidential campaign and chaired the Women for Obama organization. She was a senior official in the Clinton administration and the first director of the White House Office for Women's Initiative and Outreach. Before joining the Obama campaign, she was executive director of Harvard's Center for Public Leadership and currently serves as the founding director of the Center for Women in Business at Bentley University. It is my pleasure to welcome Betsy Myers here to talk about her new book, Take the Lead, Motivate, Inspire, and Bring Out the Best in Yourself and Everyone Around You. Betsy Myers, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. One of the things that struck me is that so many of these ideas that we will talk about with respect to the reality of leadership today and authenticity and collaboration are things that seem to come naturally to young people today. It's clear that we've gone through this real generational shift in terms of how we look at leadership today.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what we've seen in this century is that kind of what worked in the past, which was the command and control kind of leadership, I know everything, do as I say or else, doesn't work today because the world has changed. And, you know, the statistics that show us last year that 70% of the new entrants into the workplace were women and people of color, the generational issues, that command and control doesn't work anymore. It's not productive, although we all know people who still use it. But the new leadership is more of a collaborative listening, bringing people together.
As someone that studied this for a long time, when did we begin to make this shift? How did this transformation take place?
Well, you know, I think it's over the last 20 years for sure. I mean, I was at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard's Kennedy School, and we actually did a study in 2006 that kind of was a study that showed the Americans' thoughts about leadership across the sectors. And what we found from that study was that leadership, our confidence in our leaders across the sectors had been declining for 20 years. And, you start to say, wow, you know, this is what's effective, what's not effective. How do we, 70% of Americans think that our leadership across the sectors is actually doing harm to the United States and to our sectors. What is effective? And you start to see some of people who are, you know, having more success in leadership, like a Bill Clinton, Nelson Mandela, women entrepreneurs, you know, the fastest growing segment of the business economy, who lead differently. And so we started to study these kinds of examples at the Center for Public Leadership and found that there's a new way to lead.
And it's interesting that all of this is happening at the same time that polls seem to indicate that the public is losing confidence with leadership. This is not a political issue, but just in terms of the way the public feels about those that are leading them.
Right, across the sectors, right?
Right.
So, in religious, in business, in the press, in politics, yes, across the board, and in our families. How we're leading our families. I think people are saying, wait a minute, you know, maybe we need to rethink how we're leading. And, you know, a lot of what my book talks about is just being conscious as human beings, that to begin with, what makes us human is our emotions. And to remember that, you know, the behaviors of which we do, whether we're a parent or a teacher or a politician or an academic, what are the behaviors that I'm doing that either elicit productive response or unproductive response? And so part of being a leader is being conscious of the behaviors of which we use.
And the impact that they have on other people.
Absolutely. Because that's really what the core of my book is about, is really what I'm saying is that that leadership actually produces a feeling. It's a different way to think about leadership. And when people feel valued, feel supported, feel acknowledged, feel part of something bigger than themselves, they do their best work. And as leaders, we're only as good as the productive people around us.
It's interesting to think about it in terms of not only the command and control model as being obsolete, but that in so many ways that model was about teasing out emotion from the process, all the things that really we find are important today.
Absolutely. I think that's part of what's interesting about this new concept about leadership, which is reminding us that what makes us human beings is that we have emotions. And every one of us, if we were to close our eyes and think about the times in our life we were most productive, most excited to get out of bed, where we were happiest in the workplace, weren't those the times that we were, where we felt, you know, valued and appreciated and part of something bigger than ourselves and clear about what our job was about, those kinds of things.
How much of this comes out of the nature of change in our society today? The fact that it is a different world, the change is happening so rapidly that this kind of authenticity is really the antidote to the fear that we see so much of today.
You know, I wonder, that's a very interesting question, but I also wonder if you go back, you know, even though command and control was used as a leadership technique, you know, was that as effective as it could have been? You know, were people really happy in the workplace? I'd have to question that because, you know, when people feel like they have a voice, when they feel like they're part of it, part of the company, when they feel like they matter, you know, that has that really changed? Even though, you know, the workplace has changed and maybe command and control doesn't work as well, although people still use it, wasn't it always important that the people that worked for you felt valued and supported and encouraged?
But, of course, that creates fears and responsibilities. It's a little like looking at the former Soviet Union today and seeing the changes that have taken place, but the longing on the part of a lot of people for that kind of authoritarian rule that at least made them feel secure, even though it didn't make them feel very free or appreciated.
Right. I mean, there's always two sides to every story, right? But if you look what's happened across the world in the last year, across this country from Egypt on, where people are saying, wait a minute, it doesn't work anymore, and we want a place where we have a voice. And that's really what the Internet and all the social media has done, is it's allowed people who weren't able to have a voice in a very public way.
The other thing that you talk about, and this relates to this whole command control issue and leaders today really leading by asking questions as opposed to giving orders, is that the world is so much more complex today, there's no one that has all the answers.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the crux, right? So many people say, well, I'm not a leader. And I always say, well, at the very least, you're leading your own life. But a lot of times people say, well, I'm not a leader because I don't have all the answers. And what I'm saying in the book is, no, actually, leaders are those people who are willing to ask the questions, because you can't possibly know what's going on in every part of your organization or what your people are thinking. And it's those leaders that are willing to say, you know, what's going on in the front lines? Tell me something I don't know. You know, what's going on around here that's working, and what's going on around here that's not working? And then what happens when you do that is the people that you ask, assuming that you create an environment in which people are willing to tell you, they feel more valued. They feel like they're part of the team. They feel like they're part of the solutions. And that gets, you know, more productivity out of your people and more, loyalty to you.
The other aspect of that is the self-knowledge that's part of that that you talk about.
Mm-hmm. Self-knowledge is, I think, the key component to leadership is, you know, who am I? Rigorous, the willing to be rigorous in my pursuit of self-knowledge across my life. You know, am I in the right job? Am I in the right career? Am I in the right environment which supports me? You know, are the people around me in the right jobs? You know, how as a leader can I support them to have that self-knowledge? But yes, because that's the willingness to step back and say, what are the behaviors that I'm doing that work for me, and what are the behaviors I'm doing that don't work for me? And also being willing to ask those around you, because sometimes, you know, you could be upside down with a person in your organization and not even be aware of it. And so being willing to seek out the answers of yourself when you don't have the ability to see it 100% for yourself, but who are the people in your life that you're truth tellers? Who are the people that are giving you really consistent and honest feedback? So often we get feedback that isn't 100% honest, and then if you get that, you don't really grow from the situation. So the willingness to really say, you know, I want to be a better person. I want to be a better leader. What is the information that I need about myself that's critical to my success?
What about the intangibles of leadership, the people that, and you talk about some of them in Take the Lead, people that just walk through a room and you know that they have something?
Yeah, the Bill Clintons of the world. Yes, those people that, you know, are, I think, naturally extroverts or naturally curious about other people, that you know, are able to, you know, have that ability. But, you know, again, that's something that we're all different. And so one of the things I say about leadership is that not everybody, you know, if you're an introvert, it's, you know, what are the ways that you can connect with people by being yourself, you know, not trying to be somebody else. And I think that's what there's been 1,000 studies across the academic world on this topic of leadership, which is, you know, what are the 5 or 6 things? If we could just find out what those 5 or 6 things are, and then people could copy them, and I could be the next Jack Welch, or I could be the next Howard Schultz of Starbucks, or the next Bill Clinton of politics. You know, but what we found is that there's no set way to lead. It's really who you are. And that when you really step into who you are and what your strengths are and your willingness to improve as a human being and as a leader, that's what leadership is really about. And you can't copy anybody else.
Right. The other part of it is that in any leader's arc of success, there are always ups and downs, that there's a process to this. It's not an absolute.
Absolutely. I always say this, too, when I'm talking to groups of people, which is leadership is messy because life's messy. So you're never going to go in and have everything perfect. If I just do these 5 things or I act this way, every day will come out peachy. But that's half the fun of it, I think, is the human dynamic of the environment of which you're in, which is always throwing us, you know, interesting curveballs or things that you didn't think about. And that's why in my book, I talk about, you know, the willingness to consistently look at yourself. How did I handle that situation? How could I have done it better? You know, what are the behaviors that I might be seeing consistently in my life? And then the willingness to ask the questions, you know, what didn't I see? What's working? What's not working? What does somebody see on the front line that I don't know about? Right? And then the consciousness to be aware of bringing out the productive feelings of your people, thanking them, including them, making sure they're clear about their jobs. But at the end of the day, you know, leadership will always be messy, which actually kind of makes it fun, I think, and challenging.
One of the phrases, it's one of your principles of leadership, and it's one of the phrases that we hear so much of today, both in politics and leadership and business, is this notion of authenticity. Talk a little about that.
Well, and that really is about who you really are. You know, who am I? And we hear this word authenticity a lot, and sometimes it gets like, what does that really mean? But what it's really saying is that, you know, who am I and what are my strengths and what makes me happy and what makes me excited to get out of bed in the morning. So, you know, an example that I actually didn't put in the book but I love is a man who worked for me at the Center for Public Leadership who was my CFO, and his mother had told him when he went to college, get your accounting degree because you'll always have a job in the financial world. And at 50 years old, he found himself, one, not really liking being a CFO, and number two, not really that good at it. And he could do it, but it really wasn't his strength. His strength was really graphic design and a more creative way of being. And so here he was 50 years old and not very happy in his life. And so those are the things, you know, that you have to ask yourself, well, who am I, and am I living the life that is really about, you know, that suits me for who I am and the strengths that I have? And that's really being authentic. And then, as a leader, helping those people around you to live their authentic life. You know, are they in the right job? Are they in the right organization for who they are? You know, is this the right culture for them to succeed in? And that's part of a leader's job is to really help people, you know, if they haven't discovered it already, to move towards that direction.
Talk a little bit about collaboration, something we see all too little of in some places today.
Right. Well, you know, as a leader, you can't really get a whole lot done if people aren't willing to collaborate with you. And I think that's one of the huge problems that we have in our government today. It's, you know, we've got to this place where the Republicans and Democrats don't seem to be able to work together, and particularly when you have, you know, one party heading up the Congress and another party in the presidency. How do we get to this place where in today's world, if the Republicans win, the president loses, the president wins, the Republicans lose? And it's not about really getting anything done. It's about killing the other guy for the next election or the woman. And so that's what I think the problem is in Washington, is that we don't have this environment of collaboration. And so how do you get anything done in the best interest of the American people? It didn't used to be like that. I mean, remember when Ronald Reagan was president and Tip O'Neill, you know, they were friends and they could, you know, at least talk about trying to get something done for the American people.
The interesting part of it is that it is so out of sync with everything else that is going on in our society. I mean, all the things that you're talking about that are taking place in our educational institutions, in our businesses, and families, that all of it is consistent with this newer style of leadership, and everything that is going on in terms of government or politics seems to be antithetical to that.
It does feel like that, and, you know, it's because everything we get done, collaboration is building the relationships, you know, with others around you, your colleagues and the people you work with and your constituents, to get the work done, whatever that is. And so how do you, you know, it's almost impossible and for anyone to, right now, in the environment of which Washington is working or facilitating, is, you know, how could anyone go in there if it's impossible to build the relationships? And I think presidents go in there with full intentions. You know, I know Barack Obama did, went in there with a full intention to build relationships across the aisle, and, you know, it has not been as successful as he would have liked in that area. But you have to step back and say, is it the president, or is it the Congress? Is it the system of which he's trying to work in, which is completely against collaboration? You know, in the jobs bill, for example, I mean, the president went in there and included in the bill pieces that the Republican Party had been championing and supporting, and, you know, and again, they're still not willing to work with them. So what do you do? I mean, that's one I'm just baffled by, and I think most of the people are baffled with. Where do we go from here, and how does, you know, changing a president, you know, putting new people in Congress, it doesn't seem to change anything. It's the same environment and the same inability to collaborate.
It's like rearranging the proverbial deck chairs on the Titanic.
Right, exactly. So we say, well, we'll throw this person out, put somebody else in, but if it's the same culture of not collaboration, it doesn't really matter who's in there. So that's we have to look at the system of which we've somehow gotten to this place of extremism that doesn't seem to be benefiting the American people at the end of the day. That's the sad part. You know, you're at 9% unemployment, you know, and there's a lot of issues that we need to deal with in our country. But if you have people in Washington that are unwilling to solve those problems in a collaborative way, you know, we're going to find ourselves 10 years, 20 years down the road in worse shape than we are today.
But part of what's missing are two other principles that you talk about within the context of how we connect with each other. And that is this sense, one, of curiosity and being interested in what other people are thinking and what they're about, and also a sense of fairness and generosity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, curiosity is such a really key part of leadership, because it's really the ability to say, wow, maybe somebody has another idea or something I don't know about or something I need to learn that's going to, you know, improve my productivity, improve my brain, my way I look at things, my perspective. And so I think that's a really key piece, because, again, it goes back to the fact that nobody, no matter what you do for a living, can know everything. So the curiosity to ask the questions, the curiosity to think that, you know, maybe someone next to you has a better idea or a new perspective, which makes it really exciting. And people, the best leaders in our country are those people that are, you never think they have it all figured out. And one of the stories I tell in the book is about Sully Sullenberger, who landed the plane on the Hudson in early 09. And what I loved about, heard him speak and read his book, and what I love about his story is that he basically said, as a captain, it's easy as a captain and, you know, flying planes for 30 plus years to get lazy about our knowledge of technology flies the planes today. And he said, but I never got tired of learning and making sure that I was the best pilot and I knew how the plane worked in every aspect. So when it came down to those 208 seconds, his whole career and all his curiosity for learning was tested in those 208 seconds. So it's stories like that, no matter how good we get, no matter how long we've been in an industry, you know, really asking the questions, pushing the envelope of your learning to make sure you're the best.
Betsy Myers, the book is Take the Lead, Motivate, Inspire, and Bring Out the Best in Yourself and Everyone Around You. Betsy, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.